I'm presenting this paper on behalf of Axel, who's down the front, and myself. We're both working on a research project known as EdgeX. What I'm really presenting here is just an outline of what the project is, not anything that we found, because we haven't found anything yet, because we haven't really started yet. So it's really more the rationale for the project and just a little kind of synopsis of what we're doing and what kind of methodologies we're using, what we're hoping to find out. So it's going to be brief, but you know, probably no one's going to complain about that. Okay. Right. So I'm both part of the faculty, the Creative Industries faculty at QUT in Queensland in Australia. And Creative Industries is a particular kind of project that's around. It's probably got more prominence in the UK and increasingly in Australia and less so in the US. But the proposition of Creative Industries is in part that many creative activities feed into productive capacities and economic advantages of a knowledge economy. So a knowledge economy actually relies on having strong creative industries as part of the economy. But that these activities often slip under the radar of the metrics. So when economic activity is measured, often a lot of what goes on in the creative industries doesn't get registered in the metrics of what counts. And that, of course, matters in terms of policy. So Leadbeater and Oakley in 1999 identified the missing middle in accounting for contributions to economic well-being. And these were the contributions that small to medium-sized enterprises make to the economy and that went largely uncounted. And this, of course, means that policymakers... Thanks. This, of course, means that policymakers miss their significance. And in missing that, there are consequences for the development of appropriate infrastructure within an economy. So it's important that stuff gets counted. It's important that it starts to register on the horizon of policymakers. So with the advent of a vibrant user-led content creation communities that operate at a micro level, and often drifting between commercial and non-commercial practices, we have a further bit of unmapped territory, okay, which we've named the missing grassroots. Okay. So the research project described in this presentation is about mapping the missing grassroots and seeking to engage and build grassroots local content creation sector. So that's what we mean. The project's official title has a lot of mapping the missing grassroots in its very prominence. So, and that's what we mean by that. It's going further than the missing middle. It's saying with user-generated content, we actually need to be looking at both commercial and amateur micro-level activity. There's also an issue here about the importance of local content. So the advent of the internet has established that one of the great things about the internet is its capacity to link people up to shared interests, right? And that these communities of interest defy geography. Yep. At least to some extent, that's been one of the key attractions of the internet has been going, hey, you don't have to be restricted to your community, your geographical community, you can find your community of interest. But we're also interested in the ways in which people engage with the people they already know and who are geographically close, and how they actually use the internet and all the different communication opportunities that affords in their local communication ecologies. So, you know, we know that lots of kids and teenagers sit at home at night chatting to their school friends online. So while they're not kind of so present, they're still geographically close. We know that people are not exclusively interacting with strangers online, and most are interacting with people they already know. So the internet and other mobile communication devices have kind of been absorbed into people's communication ecologies. And we're interested to see whether introducing and strengthening people's access to ICTs can strengthen the local geographical sense of community as well as the community's interest. So if you introduce greater access for people, and if you introduce a kind of support for that access, can that strengthen a sense of local identity, and can that strengthen people's sense of community? We're partly looking at this in the context of the US-Australia Free Trade Agreement. So in the US Free Trade Agreement, US-Australia Bilateral Free Trade Agreement, local content was an area that was kind of quarantined in all the IP arrangements and the freeing up of market arrangements, with, you know, and 70% of this agreement was about IP. Australia was allowed to maintain its local content quotas for its broadcast industries. So we're still allowed to say, if you're a broadcaster, you must have 10% of your content between 6 p.m. and 9 p.m. must be Australian produced. Okay, so the free trade agreement didn't affect that, but it doesn't apply to any new media applications. So there's no way that we can mandate Australian local content in other media forms. So the thing is then that you need to stimulate local content creation. And in a new media context, it seems here that amateur and DIY content creation, which is alive and well and thriving online, may be one of the answers to the question of what does local content policy look like in that kind of environment. But, you know, the policy question then becomes how do you provide the infrastructure for that, and what should you be doing to stimulate local content creation in online environments, and how can you be encouraging people to actually kind of work with that local identity stuff. So it's a new twist on local content, which is a cultural issue rather than an economic issue. So we're interested in the relationship between commercial and non-commercial producers and whether we can create pathways for those non-commercial producers who want to go commercial. Can we create pathways for them into a commercial sector kind of employment? So the EdX project. This is the front page of the site that we've built. The EdX project is designed to provide a space for the local people of Ipswich to upload their creative content. So Ipswich is a small city. It's got a population of about 150,000. It's about 45 minutes drive west of Brisbane, which is where Axel and I both live. And Brisbane's the capital city of Queensland and has a, you know, population of about 4 million. Ipswich has a diverse range of ethnic communities. It's generally working class or working poor or welfare dependent people, as well as there's a few newer, more affluent developments springing up just recently as Brisbane spreads. It's gone from a long history as a mining town. It's slid into a less viable economic position. It has its fair share of social problems as a result. So the EdX project seeks to both to map some of those grassroots networks that are generating content and to foster pathways into industry environments for users with such ambitions. By providing a central space for the development, exhibition, sharing and exchange of content created by grassroots creative practitioners. I think I might have needed that directly from you, Adam. It just sounds so like you. And through the use of a competition structure to focus their efforts. So competitions will be held on the site and judged by professionals from industry. And in part, this is hoped to give exposure to artists so that the industry people can become aware of their work. And that's part of the pathways into industry sort of strategy that we're using. And also competitions have a way of kind of generating content and generating a bit of a bit of momentum, because, you know, you can't build these sites and just expect people to come. You have to do a lot of work to try and get the initial uptake before you can get that momentum that actually sustains the site eventually when it becomes self-sustaining. The partners are Queensland University of Technology, which is where Axel and I are from, University of Queensland, Ipswich City Council, and the Australia Research Council provides a large chunk of the funding. So, the strategies and goals of the project. We'll use a number of methods to carry out this project. An initial survey of current local content sites in Ipswich has been carried out, and there wasn't really a great deal around. Mostly it's provided by a few key institutions like the library and the council and the art gallery. We're in the process of developing the website. This has proved to be unbelievably slow and frustrating. I know that it's a common story, but we were kind of institutionally captured and disappeared down an institutional vortex of economies of scale, I believe they called it. So we got sucked into a development process with six other sites, and as a result it's taken an unbelievably long time to have the back end developed. And that's held the project up significantly. So, warning, warning. Try not to base your projects on the website. Initially, we're recruiting people to the site by approaching existing communities of interest offline and ascertaining whether they'd like to use the site. And if they would, then we run training sessions with them. And we'll provide a lot of ongoing support and contact for those groups. So, very much focused on doing a lot of offline work with people, not actually just trying to do it through the online stuff. So we've made a lot of contacts with a lot of different community groups. We've contacted 30 or 40 so far. We haven't quite got the website up to scratch yet, so we can't really go much further with them. But we have a few people who will run training sessions with them. We've got some training labs out of Ipswich that are really accessible in the centre of town. And we'll just maintain an ongoing contact with them and support them in using the site. So we found that that people who currently don't use the net, you know, we've had a few instances where you approach somebody and say, would you be interested in this? No. And then when you tell them a bit more about it and you go, and it's free and we'll train you how to use it, they're like, I'm there. You know, like the turnaround is really dramatic and very interesting for the way that it tells you that there's a barrier there for people to use this stuff, and it's about money and it's about skill. And if you can overcome those barriers, they're very enthusiastic participants in the whole project. So so we really regard the offline work as, you know, basically an essential part of the project. So once the site has a live constituency, we've got a few researchers who are very interested in tracking content to see what people do with it. So seeing whether people use and reuse other people's material and remix it and so on. We also offer the Creative Commons licensing on the site. And so when you register on the site, one of the questions that it asks you is what kind of Creative Commons license or copyright license would you like to use? And it kind of has a little bit of online training there and then to help people. But they also get a choice every single time you upload content, you're asked what kind of license you'd like to put on. And the Creative Commons licenses are all offered every single time. And plus, you know, links off to Creative Commons sites so you can find out more about them. So we're working with the Creative Commons Clinic, which comes out of QUT. QUT is the lead institution for Creative Australian Creative Commons licenses. So they have a clinic there. So they've got three or four people there who travel all around Australia training people in using Creative Commons. So they're part of this project too, and we'll work with them. So they'll come along to our training workshops and run bits on Creative Commons. So we're hoping to really get people up to speed on that, and then it will be very interesting to see whether they use them or not. You know, maybe people won't, but it'll be very interesting to kind of track that. I'm very interested in watching how people actually manage their communities online. I want to know what's going on with governance. I want to know how communities online actually police each other or police their members and things like that. So groups will be able to have their own spaces on this site, so I'm very keen to be observing that. And of course we're interested in figuring out whether integrating this kind of new media into people's communication ecologies can strengthen their sense of local identity, because, you know, Ipswich has got a few problems, and it would be interesting to see whether we can create something that feels a bit better for people through integrating this into their existing communication stuff. The website design, it's got everything that YouTube and Flickr and you know, most of the Web 2 kind of sites have. You can upload video, photos, podcast, text, whatever. There's commenting, there's tagging, there's tag files. We've gone fairly strongly for a mapping interface to try and reinforce the geographical aspects of the project. So there's an Ipswich map in the background, and then every time you upload content you can geotag it on a Google map, and so then when you're searching for content you can search for it geographically. You also search for people geographically and groups geographically. So everything gets mapped basically as a way of trying to reinforce that. And yeah, there are individual group and public spaces. So you can have your own private stuff that nobody else can see, heavy group stuff, and the public stuff, and there's the competition stuff as well. So this is the actual site. So this is the site. You can see the Ipswich action happening in the background there. If you go to search the content, you can see this is all just pretty much test stuff, but there are various ways that you can search for content. There's a tag found down the bottom. You can click on some of these. It's all just programmers testing words there at the moment. You can click on the content, go to the content. It comes up with a nice preview. I took all these photos on my mobile phone, by the way. Get out of it. You can comment on it. The commenting can have threads. You can actually upload other content in relation to that content. So it's these days fairly standard stuff. You can rate it. You can tag it. You can describe it in terms of so interesting or whatever. You can see it's got a create content license there, and then you can go over to what else she's put up there. And there it is. And so I think the video function is finally working as well.
The Intex project thing.
I made this in 10 minutes too. This is all off my mobile phone.
That's the Queensland technology. There's a partnership project between
Queensland
and the Ipswich City Council.
So you can search on people, you can, so there's a consistency there in the design interface. And you can also just type in here. The expos will be a competition space. But okay, so that's a basic run through of what it is, and of course you register. So the community engagement, I think I've really covered that. Basically, apart from the stuff that I've already talked about, we're really trying to achieve a critical mass so that it's sustainable beyond the life of the research project. And the Ipswich City Council will continue to fund the project, to fund the site. If it's achieved a critical mass, if it's got enough activity on it and it's proving to be useful, they want to use it too. They want to use it as a place where they can list all the community groups, where they can send people for information and stuff. So they've got ideas. The other thing for the Ipswich City Council, the advantages to getting more people online and using online sites is that, they have their own e-governance agenda where they want to deliver more of their services online, but they really need their population to be more engaged in online activity before they can do that. So anything that generates further engagement of the community for them is a good thing. So that's kind of one of their agendas that drives their involvement with this. Just wanted to say a few quick words about ethnographic action research. This is action research with an ethnographic twist. The thing about action research, ethnographic action research and the cycle is that it involves the research subjects in the doing and planning of the project. And thus we'll spend quite a bit of time with people in the online and offline context consulting with them about how they're finding the website, what they want from it, how it could change to meet their needs. So they'll be very much involved in the design process as an ongoing process from here on in. So it's not a true ethnographic action research piece because we've designed the initial website. But from here on in, they'll be much more involved in the whole process of its ongoing development. It's the kind of participatory, user-driven focus that fits with the character of the project, if you know what I mean. Like, and the character of the medium and the issues under investigation. Because we're talking about participatory media, it seems kind of filling on to have participatory research design. That there's synergies there that actually work really well and that we want to exploit. So, and it's really interesting how you go out to groups and start talking about this stuff, they immediately have a whole raft of ideas about how they could use the site and what else they would like to do with it. So, people are full of ideas. So it's going to be very interesting to try and integrate that into this kind of recursive process. And it maintains a reflective engagement with the community. And the ethnographic aspect, we'll be attending group meetings, doing participant participation, interviews, focus groups. consultation, and things like mapping ecologies. There's a whole kind of raft of tools that we'll be using to collect data from the users and to work with that to produce an ethnographic account of the project. And that's Lyle, who's from SeniorNet. Ipswich SeniorNet is this fantastic group of seniors who teach each other computing skills. And we went to them and suggested that they might like to be involved in this, and they were just like so onto it. Because they haven't been doing internet training. They've just been restricting themselves to teaching each other how to use the computers. So they're a peer training network. So we train the trainers and they'll train the rest. They've got over 300 members. And so it's like all we really need to do is run training sessions for kind of 10 of their key trainers, and they'll train the rest of their community group. And they're just really, really keen. They're great. And they have their own training room. You know, so they're all set up as a training organisation, but they're just a really kind of nice example of the kind of organisation that you can get involved with in this, and who are just really keen to go with it. And that's all I've got to say.
Just in case some people will just like taking the URL down to have a course of work, we should say that ultimately it will be an edx.org domain. Right now, still on the development server and the full eventual URL doesn't quite work yet, but you have a look probably if you're in time on edx.org.au, you'll see the full site there. You're very welcome to create an account or log on. You probably shouldn't upload any content unless you're actually from Ipswich, because the
or have photos of Ipswich.
Obviously, yes. One of the messages is really to have an Ipswich. And I guess theoretically, I don't think we've actually limited the static stuff, so you could probably map to, you know, Vancouver or Boston or wherever you are, so on. But at this point, it'll be that point.
Okay, I've got three here, so do you want to...
I'm curious on the whole challenge of creating critical mass for sustainability.
Yeah.
What are the strategies you're trying, what if any, work as a really kind of the own
Yeah, I think it takes a lot of ongoing contact, mm-hmm. and the competition structure is one of the devices that we're really hoping will work. So the first competition we're running early next year is with the schools. Mm-hmm. So we're working with the teachers to integrate it into their curriculum. And where the Creative Commons Clinic is coming with us out to the schools, set up a competition. So then the students at the local schools will all be entering stuff onto the site using Creative Commons material found elsewhere on the web or stuff that they've made themselves. Mm-hmm. Okay, so there's an initial kind of slot of content that will arrive on the site. So, and we've also got the writers, the four local writers groups, mm-hmm. Are all very keen, and they have an annual poetry competition, and so we've already organised that they will be putting all the entries for that up on the site in the competition space. So there's a bit of a, you know, that's the kind of one of the key ways that we're hoping to drive that uptake, because once people know about it, either they'll already come back to participate in more competitions, but there'll be annual competitions, so some of that will be ongoing. But the hope is that once people get it, you know, and start using it, that they'll want to keep using it. It'd be really good as a group to start cross-fertilising, but, you know, maybe it won't work.
Do you have funds for projects from the city or elsewhere to be doing marketing?
Yeah. And the city council will do a lot of marketing. The youth group, there's a youth group called Lead On that is part funded by the council, and the woman who runs that works part time as a journalist on the local paper, and she's like, well, just tell me, I'll put it all in the local paper. So yeah, we're just kind of making those kinds of links to get the publicity going and generate buzz, but we can't do it yet until the site's kind of, so we're all kind of raring to go, but can't yet.
Yeah, so I think kind of following up on that, I'm really interested in the fact that you explicitly link it to creative industry and that literature and that movement has been criticized because it's been focused less about grassroots work that's done, more on the economic and production culture. Mm-hmm. And I was just wondering in what ways because this might be flexible enough to work with local artists or local people trying to sell or trying to build their own business.
Yep. So, no, I believe that part of the hope that they will use the site, and we won't have a facility to do transactions.
Right,
so,
but it would be more of an advertising. Or
yeah. I think that part of our hope is that it will become a marketing tool. We're not restricting ourselves. Like a lot of craft and creative groups meet in shops. You know, so we go to the local craft shops, and like go to any kind of yarn shop, and there's the knitting groups that meet, and there's the embroidery groups that meet, and you know they all meet once or twice a week, and they have a great clutch of people who are and they're all quite keen to put their work up. So that will be done through the shops, and the shops will be getting marketing goodies out of it as well. So
wanted to say that it's really interesting. I'm just going to very close to the top, so from my perspective, I'm a big fan of making
with the idea that if you do create a critical mass of content generators on the site, that it can be sustained over the long term through advertising from local businesses. So being a locally based, geographically kind of contained site, a lot of the people who work in local businesses don't have many advertising opportunities. Because local presses have been increasingly absorbed into much broader regional presses and, if not national presses. So there might be one local newspaper that you can advertise in. So we're kind of wondering whether we can generate a revenue model that, that the really small local businesses can actually be advertising on site as part of how to sustain it in the long term. That's just an idea for the future.
What
local
media is there besides the
newspaper?
Are there any radio stations or
television
stations?
There's not a TV station, but there's local radio. Yeah.
If you want to, obviously you have a connection with the newspaper. I'm just thinking that a lot of times, if you can build, because people tend to go for, a lot of communities will go for, especially in Sister Congress, to go for more traditional media, and then use their traditional media as a gateway into the online media.
Yep.
And just the idea that moving content between, like featured content between the two. So the idea of getting the content from the website, but it might be on the local radio station, or it might be on the local, it might be on TV or cable media access there, or the newspaper, as a way to share content, build media, relationships and communities, and also, it's exciting. It's one level of excitement to have your stuff on the website. Yep. Another level of excitement is to see the newspaper or out on the radio or
so do the spreadability thing.
Yeah.
I agree. It's a good idea.
I think it's really interesting. Give us your life in our short term. Ask them what you project with you and the engagement and looking at speed and that in terms of using the youth a lot of the environment, communicating how much can we give them more specific experience within the Seattle community. And it sounds like you've got some youth groups getting networked. And so I'm curious if what we can now run like Facebook and Flickr and those groups, how do we coordinate with those sorts of things that are already existing so we can capture youth, but also have something that they can't get other places so they're really coming into play with it. I don't know if you
thought about it, but I don't think we have answers for it. It's kind of interesting, the whole funding cycle that determines a lot of our research projects. When Axel and Liz put this, Liz Ferrier put this funding proposal together, it was in 2000, which was before we had these kinds of sites, okay, but it took until 2006 to get the funding, by which time this stuff was almost ubiquitous. So in some ways, it shifted from being a project that allowed people to upload stuff as a wow factor thing to kind of having a much more a much bigger focus on the local geographic community and identity angle to it, because it is pretty easy to find this kind of functionality on other sites. So we haven't. I don't know how we're going to deal with that. How we're going to attract people to the site other than through the competitions as being one of those things that is a point of difference. Yeah. And I don't know, spreadability, I think that we'll probably have to work with that in the design to see if we can pull in the Facebook MySpace stuff so that you're not having to upload twice. So the kind of linking between the two. Just the idea of adding another design feature at the moment.
We just got a user site set up that's either Facebook or if there's a lot of participation by the youth in that particular area, then you could basically set up a group, a site that's on Facebook or MySpace or whatever, something that one can play in. That is a site that is. That is what it will be, and people can link to that so you can build community within somebody else's infrastructure as a way to connect with the other. And that way, you'll also get the communication factors and actually be able to maybe see how the spread of the participation interest can work across those particular social network communities.
It is definitely a media literacy project in amongst all the rest of it. It's definitely about getting people to want to speak.
Just the distinction from Facebook or MySpace or YouTube or whatever else, really the local specificity of Facebook, we are really hoping will be a turning point for them. So people come to us because they know that's where the research community are coming from. And rather than sort of having their stuff and get lost in the huge amount of stuff that's on Facebook or on YouTube and we'll connect to everywhere basically. So we're probably going to do something that's very specific about research that you put it up there rather than just on some YouTube space somewhere. So that hopefully that will grow people as well and not possibly get lost just in these services.
We can start actually kind of arranging the intentions for your project in other words, between the two of you, you want both the creative productions by people in it, which should be posted on the site, whether or not they're relevant, and you want the particular way you have a charter for very particularly the sort of focus content to be posted here. And so we're not thinking about sort of the two not necessarily the possibly different that certain classes that you do, unless you do, you know, end up with different appeals.
Oh, I think definitely, you know, like we're going to be appealing to some people who aren't in the slightest bit interested in creative content.
Yeah.
You know, local sports groups who put up.
So, in that, you actually have our groups with Foxville. It's not a political system, but there's all those decade old community networks that have different architecture, but have a broad mission.
Yeah, it's quite interesting looking at the outcomes of this in terms of the brain looking at the data as well to see. You know, if there's any sort of demographic indicators that you saw, if there's particular groups who are doing not really about the local area, but about rules. You know, I'm not sure if you can, you know, knit in that whip switch, for example, if there's any sort of, you know, particular, some grasp for some outcomes that are probably not whip switch specific, but happen to have a strong group of people who have well mixed. On the other hand, there's probably open historians and local photographers who, you know, take all the time one has to offshore that she did, you know, which are really about documenting history heritage. So it's a really different form of history identity. And we'd like to see both of those happen. We'd like to see both in the demographically younger or older people doing things history, in particular art forms, particular forms of content. You know, what is it that that's kind of putting people into one or another of these categories? So that's what comes out of the other objects people are using.
We've got six different researchers on the project, so if that sounds like a really big spread of interest, it's because it is. But, you know, there are different people working on different aspects.
Yeah, so I'm following up on the data analysis question. Can you guys talk about sort of triangulating some of the data you find on SX with geotagging or IP mapping or something like that on existing social networks or creative sites, or looks like they're very compatible with tools for monitoring where people are posting a photo stronghold. You'll be back into some explanation as to what's going on next monitoring. And the other social network sites also have that app. So if you thought about sort of triangulating your data with existing networks and thinking about how a sort of, you know, an artificially created
one of the advantages to this site is we get to capture all the data. I don't know how much we get to capture of something like Flickr or, you know, like we don't own that data, whereas we own this data. And so we can mine this data to our heart's content. Well, I don't know how far, and Axel probably knows more about how far we can mine other data.
I think it wouldn't help much because I think we've basically said that's probably another part to go. And certainly, I don't think there's any good way to get access to any information about IP addresses that people use to particular or whether they use you in the other side. So, I think how many people are actually out there, what kind of information is it? If they had access to those logs, to their servers, then certainly I think they'd be able to find out. At least, the information, not specifically agreeing with me, so how many people from the switch IP addresses are actually going to this one? Which would be a lesson for us. If you look at geotagging, if you look at figure the geomaps, there's only such a great deal of stuff here that geotag to the industry. So, which is another way of saying that there's actually not necessarily that much geotagging happening in Australia overall here. So, that's slowly coming. And then, I'm basically curious to see how much content on paper generally actually means you have this part. So it's still growing, so I'm not quite sure if probably still relatively small percentage of stuff taking the walls. So in that sense, we're not so much, there's not so much comparison that we're really trying to keep down. I think image search particularly is great. And there'd be a really handful of users for image search or even aware of.
There were 26 geotags last time from Ipswich, which was 6 months ago, it was true, on Flickr.
Yeah, So there's nothing there, and it's interesting for us to see how much we can still that out. And also, we can look much all the time to see how we're going to think of ourselves as people who become aware of it through us. So we also can see those things that we need. But then there's just a more real question.
Have we exhausted ourselves? Great. Let's call it quits then.